taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. You know, I spent a couple weeks out on the road. I had a lot of fun. I met a lot of great people. If you're one of them, I thoroughly enjoyed my time. Went to some great places, saw some beautiful scenery throughout this country. I really did enjoy it. I've missed having the opportunity to talk to people face to face, and it's nice to get back to that. But sadly, I've also noticed a serious problem in this country. Now, that's not anything new. I've been talking about these problems, well, pretty much since this program started. But we tend to focus on the problems we have with government or with politicians or with the judges of the judicial branch. Today, I want to look at the problems beyond that. The fact that it's not simply government that is broken, but society that's broken as well. And I have a couple of examples. Now, a lot of this came from a discussion I had, a Q&A I had with some college students a few months back. And towards the end of the Q&A, one of the young men looked at me or looked at my Zoom and said, you know, you've talked about all of these rights that have been infringed upon, but it's for a good cause. And after all, society hasn't broken down. Now, I had to take a beat and gather my thoughts, but I told the young man, you know, the advantage of being older than you are is I have more experience. And I went on to the litany of rights, freedoms, liberties, things that were considered basic when I was a youth that are pretty much gone today. Now, I'm not going to recount those here, but I do want to take a look at some news items that point out, well, pretty much the same things. For example, the news media is infamous for doing this. Don Lemon, I can think of a little better name for a lemon of a newscaster, but he said people don't know what to believe on COVID because of BS attacks on journalism. Well, Mr. Lemon, maybe you don't like the fact that people are attacking journalism because you've shown yourself to be, partisan, empty-headed hacks. That you've basically sold yourself to whatever Marxist progressive movement happens to be popular at the moment. Maybe people don't believe you. Maybe they don't believe you because you've proven yourself to lie over and over and over again. Whether it's hiding the information about Hunter Biden, or the fact that hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin have shown in research to be effective, at least somewhat effective, against COVID-19. How about the fact that you've denied the studies that show that masks are not effective and that lockdowns and shutdowns have done such great damage? How about the fact that you keep hyping the case statistics and you ignore the fact that the death rate is extremely low? How about the fact that you keep pushing a vaccine and you fail to mention that this is an experimental vaccine? It hasn't been FDA approved. It's still waiting that approval. That we don't know the long-term effects, especially on children or pregnant women. Or how about the fact that you can't figure out the difference between a man and a woman? Maybe we don't believe you because you've shown yourself to be untrustworthy and unbelievable. And yes, we have a free press and you're free to be as open and as stupid as you want to be. Doesn't mean we have to listen to you. It doesn't mean we have to believe you. In fact, I believe I want more of your stupid information out because, well, better to show yourself stupid and let other people figure out just how worthless it is listening to you. Then we have Twitter, and sure, people love picking on big tech. It's practically a national sport at this point. But then I see this report that Twitter has taken to censoring not only, information they don't like, but memes. Or at least memes that are not flattering, let's say, to the Biden administration or their narrative on vaccines and vaccine passports. Has society fallen apart when the idea that I may vehemently disagree with what you have to say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it, is no longer acceptable in certain company? When Twitter now enlists users to flag misleading tweets, I wonder, who's determining what is and isn't misleading? Does it have a certain political bias? Does it have a certain penchant for government control or government power or telling people to shut up and doing what they're told? You know, during the Soviet Union and the Cold War, the East Germans had a secret police known as the Stasi. And one of the things they were really good at was getting people to be informants on their family, friends, and neighbors. Is that what Twitter's asking us to do? To become snitches and spies on people? Why? Because we don't agree with them? Is freedom of speech truly dead in America? Is freedom of press truly dead in America? Not because the government has made it so. Not even because Twitter has asked people to be spies. But because they believe and may even find enough people that are unwilling to allow dissent to exist to turn us into a police state where you're afraid to say something because of how someone may react. You say the wrong thing, it may be flagged by a neighbor on Twitter. Or maybe flagged by the White House for Facebook. And of course, you know, the White House says if it's flagged on one platform, you should be flagged on all the platforms. If you're removed from one platform, you should be removed from all platforms. See, that's not a problem with government. That's a problem with society. Or this story where Carrie Underwood came under fire because she liked a speech on Twitter by a Matt Walsh opposing school mask mandates in Nashville. And I live not far from Nashville. And if you listen to this program from any period of time, mask mandates are illegal. They violate the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. They violate the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. They ought not be tolerated. But not even the fact that Matt Walsh actually spoke this speech, but the simple fact that a country music star liked the speech, now she's under fire for how dare you even agree with this person. That's not a problem with government. It's a problem with society. It's a problem with you and with me and with our neighbors. And if we don't do something about this, this only gets worse. I mean, sure, we complain when YouTube pulls down the video of a news conference where a U.S. congressman discussed the legal challenges to Mayor de Blasio's vaccine passports in New York City. But YouTube only does that because they can get away with it because the people still watch YouTube. YouTube has paid no serious penalty for its censorship, for its deplatforming, for its demonetizing, for its repeated attacks on free speech. But they don't pay any price for it, so why should they stop? YouTube is getting away with it. Now again, whether you agree with the vaccine passports or not, do you really want to live in a world where a difference of opinion is not allowed? Because I guarantee you that at some point, you're going to be the one with a different opinion. And it's not just, again, big tech or even social media. It's also professional organizations. So the American Academy of Pediatrics claims that masks have no negative effects on children. They claim there's no evidence that you know, wearing masks for long periods of time is detrimental to children, or that the fact that babies and young children study faces, the lack of information from that would have long-term developmental issues. Of course, there's no way to prove that in the long term yet, but interestingly enough, the American Academy of Pediatrics also provides no studies to prove that masks are effective, that they've shown masks to have no negative effects. They simply make this bold statement and the American people march on like lemmings right off a cliff. I've seen studies. I saw 100 parents actually sent their children's masks to a lab where they found almost a dozen possibly lethal pathogens in these masks because they're worn for long periods of time, because they create a warm, moist environment where these pathogens can grow, because they're rarely washed and cleaned frequently enough. They're often not worn properly. They often involve fidgeting with it, but you know, we don't ignore that. Just listen to the experts. Society is broken if we're not allowed to dissent and if we depend on experts, because experts can be wrong. You know, experts once said that the black race wasn't human. Experts once said that women were inherently inferior to men. Experts once said that it was impossible for a free people to live without a gentry to rule them. And now we have experts telling us, just trust us, this is the facts, when they provide no facts to support their claims. Of course, then you have different organizations that are so bent on these vaccine passports and vaccination. Tulane football now requires someone to show their vaccine papers in order to get into a game. Or you've got, again, New York City has their vaccine passport. So now if you want to attend a Brooklyn Nets game, well, you better be vaccinated. But we don't know the long-term effects of these vaccinations. We don't even know the effectiveness of these vaccinations. We were told that the vaccine meant you wouldn't get COVID, but that's shown not to be the case. They refer to them as breakthrough infections, but is it truly a breakthrough? I mean, what percentage of the cases involve people who are vaccinated? Isn't that kind of important information? But you see, American society has become so dependent on government masters and leaders that most people don't even ask this question. I was watching the news the other day, and I saw my wife was watching the news, and I saw a report about a vast mandate rally, you know, opposing mass mandates and vaccine mandates, I guess it was. And I asked, "Gee, where is this? New York?" She goes, "No, California." So even places in traditionally progressive states are asking, "Does this really make sense?" You have a major airline that forces a 12-year-old autistic boy to undergo a COVID-19 test despite the fact that he had an exemption. Now, I mean, he had a letter from his doctor exempting him from testing, which is within the UK's guidance, but now, this is actually a flight from Spain to UK. It shows it's not just Americans that have gone stupid. Even the UK, even Spain, they're so afraid of this boogie virus that the vast majority of people survive that they would subject an ADHD kid, an autistic ADHD child, to go through a nasal swab in direct violation of doctor's orders. Have we all gone stupid? Have we all gone crazy? This is what the society has fallen to. I see Juan Williams, another example of a quote unquote journalist. He made a statement that Trump's election fraud claim should bar him from the 2024 race. Now, I hate to remind Juan. No, actually, I want to remind Juan Williams. Because, you know, if someone's going to say something stupid, you really ought to let them know. Otherwise, they remain stupid. because there was fraud in the 2020 election. There was malfeasance in the 2020 election, and the evidence keeps growing from the thousands and thousands of extra ballots that were cast to the finding of hidden and secret ballots, from evidence that the voting machines could easily be set to mistabulate votes, to the states that just plain committed crimes by appointing their presidential electors in a manner determined by someone other than the legislature. But you see, because Juan Williams doesn't like Trump, he's just using that as an excuse to say he should be barred from the 2024 election. Well, based on that logic, Mr. Williams, based on your years of fraud as a journalist, maybe you should be barred from, well, I guess it was The Hill where you tweeted this out at. Now, that is just as ridiculous as saying that Trump shouldn't be allowed to run for office because you don't like him, or because you don't like the fact that he pointed out fraud, or maybe it's just the fact that the fraud was in favor of your preferred candidate. That's not journalism. That's an opinion. It's a legally dubious one. But this is what passes for journalism today in America. Now, I'm not saying journalists of old were as pure as the wind-driven snow, but it's gotten so bad that you can't trust a thing that these people say. And that truly is a sad state of affairs. But it's not a problem with government. It's a problem with society. The very idea that rights and liberties are no longer considered sacred or sacrosanct anywhere. The very idea that I have the right to say or to publish something that someone finds offensive seems to be dying in America. Now, I don't know about the rest of the world. I don't spend a lot of time. In fact, I haven't spent any time over there. But here in the United States, these freedoms are dying. The very idea of live and let live seems to be gone. We feel the need to control what other people do. And we feel, it's not like this is something new. This has been a habit of the human race since it was conceived. But it seems like it's become so powerful, so metastasized, that it infects every part of life. The idea that we can disagree without being disagreeable, the idea of alternate points of view, the idea of listening to all sides and coming to the correct conclusion is anathema. It's being taught to our children. And they are now they've brought it to the fore, to the point where logic and reason is no longer considered a reason to do something. Forget the rationality. It makes me feel good. Is this what has happened to America? And if society is broken, since all power is inherent in the people, why are we surprised that our governments are broken? Because our governments are populated with men and women from this very society that is broken. Well, but what are we to do? I mean, that's obviously the question that has to be answered. What can we do? I mean, obviously, I guess one answer would be to, you know, simply bury your head in the sand, pretend it's not happening, and go along your merry way. You know, kind of like that poem from Martin Niemöller from World War II. First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me. There was no one left to speak for me. That seems to be the history of America for the last few decades. Okay, yeah, they're attacking that group, but hey, at least I'm not part of that group. I'll be more than happy to sit aside and watch it happen. to watch men and women have their lives destroyed by bigotry, by the inability to accept a difference, an unwillingness to stand when you see injustice happening to somebody else. And this is not a small or a minor point. But think about this. What are most Americans' reaction when they get that jury summons in the mail? What about the saying that you're not tried by a jury of your peers, but by 12 people who couldn't figure out how to get out of jury duty? Even the responsibility to stand in judgment over a fellow person, to look at the facts, to look at the law, to look at the evidence, and try to come up to a just conclusion. We've looked at it with disdain, as something we have to avoid if at all possible. Even to the point of coming up with creative ways to get out of jury duty. I've heard dozens of them. But what about the responsibility to the accused? Don't they deserve someone who cares enough about justice to seek it for them? Even if they're guilty, to make sure that their guilt and their punishment is just with the facts and with the law. Even that the law is proper. Don't we owe that to our fellow man and our fellow woman? Don't we owe that to fellows who live here? But no, we found our ways to get out of it. We thought it was too time-consuming. I didn't care. I mean, after all, I'm not the criminal, so I'm not going to speak out because, well, I'm not a criminal, so it'll never be me on the other side of that bench. I'm not the one with the radical idea, so it'll never be me standing before a crowd or a group of reporters being lied about, being maligned, either because you disagreed with someone or because you're in the wrong group. Think of the Covington kids. Think of what they went through when they were lied about by the news media, by CNN and others. I don't mean misreported. I mean outright lied. Don't they deserve justice too? And if you won't stand up for them, who's going to bother standing up for you when you're the one in the dock? See, if we want America to get better, we must realize that ultimately the problem rests between the ears of the American people, between our thoughts and our understanding and our willingness to allow others to disagree. To say to someone, I vehemently disagree with what you say, with your lifestyle, with your life choices, but I'll defend those rights to the death. I may not pay for your mistakes. I should not be forced to pay for your mistakes, but I shouldn't try to have those mistakes banned simply because I disagree with them. That's not freedom. That's not liberty. See, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, because good intentions often lead to bad outcomes. We go from seeing a true vice and wishing to stamp it out so we will not allow it in public conversation. We will ostracize those who follow some we would call arcane or evil practice, never stopping to think that one day our standards will change and your vaunted goals, your lifelong ambitions now becomes one of those unholy practices, at least to somebody. You know, that somebody has a microphone or a Twitter account or just a big following somewhere and the willingness to use it, suddenly you are destroyed. Not because of what you did, but because you allowed others to dictate what will be acceptable in public and you allowed others to trample the rights of people you didn't care about. And now here they are trampling your rights. Not only should you not be surprised, you asked for it. And sadly, we are feasting on the poison of that today. Now, before I head off to break, I want to remind everybody to go to healthycell.com/outloud. They've redesigned the vitamin. It's great. It's a little gel pack. You take it directly or you squirt it in a drink. It's designed to nourish your cells, to revitalize your cells at that cell level. Help you perform better, help you live better, help you keep well and as these diseases ravage our nation, or just to help you sleep. Try the REM sleep. If you have problems falling asleep, like I often do when I travel, try the REM sleep. Take it before you go to bed, and sure enough, in a few minutes, you're feeling drowsy and ready to fall asleep. Get a better night's sleep, wake up refreshed, all with Healthy Cells REM Sleep Supplement. And as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 20% off your first order just by going to healthycell.com/outloud. Try any of their products, but today I'm recommending the REM Sleep. Give it a try. It can make a difference to your life. That's healthycell.com/outloud for 20% off your first order.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
It was a vision that gave birth to a unique multimedia platform that would combine classic talk radio, great writers, and memorable podcasts and videos. AmericaOutloud.com is a conservative leader in a field that is predominantly run by far-left progressive globalists. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've returned to the Constitution Study, and today we're talking about how society is broken. You see, here we tend to complain about government officials and how they're violating the Constitution and violating our rights, but I think it's time we take a look at ourselves squarely in the mirror and ask what we're doing to contribute to it. So I wanted to look at some of the examples of society actually falling apart, how letting our rights be compromised, be infringed upon for what many would might say be a good cause initially, is really destroying the very idea of the land of the free and the home of the brave. Now, in the first half, I talked about some examples, again, not focusing on governments, but focusing on things like the media and society as a whole. But I want to take a look at some more. For example, let's take a look at some teachers' unions. Now, the largest teachers union, the NEA, has endorsed vaccines, testing, and mandates. Now, I want you to stop and think about this for a minute. The purpose of a union, at least the stated purpose of the union, is to protect its members. I can understand that. I don't have an inherent problem with unions. And if there was evidence that the vaccine actually protected someone, then I could understand someone wanting to have the vaccine before they entered an environment like a school. But ignoring the evidence that kids not only don't tend to contract COVID, they don't tend to spread it to others. Why is the union pushing for this? Why is the union trying to take away the rights of its members, not to mention the parents and students that they're supposed to teach? If they were calling for the availability of vaccines, well, that's fine, but that doesn't appear to be the problem. They want draconian testing and mandate measures. Why? Could it be that the NEA sees a goal other than protecting the teachers? Certainly it's not educating your children. But they're not the only ones. See, a University of Minnesota union demands that the university's police be disarmed. Now, I know there are a lot of people out there that have hoplophobia, an irrational fear of firearms. But when we start making our decisions based on these irrational fears, let me ask you a question. Imagine this. You come home late one night, or better yet, you're asleep one night, and you hear a noise. You get up and you look out the door and, well, there's someone breaking into your house and burgling you. Or you're walking down the street and a couple of thugs start pushing you around and demanding your money. Or you're stopped at a corner and someone shoves a gun in the window of your car and demands you get out. Who do you want to show up? Don't you call for someone with a gun to protect you? When your life is being threatened, don't you want someone with a gun to come protect you? I mean, it's one thing to be so foolish to think that only government should have arms. It's another thing to believe that the government should be disarmed, taking away any opportunity it has to do a job it's not designed to do, namely to protect you. We've become so dependent on government for everything that now the American people don't even want the government to be armed. That's as irrational as after one of the school shootings, a Staten Island school board wanted to hire retired New York City Police Department officers to be undercover, plain clothes, armed security. They weren't, you know, these weren't, you know, armed, uniformed. They weren't going to be there to scare the kids. But if something happened, they would be there to protect the kids. And many of the parents went nuts. They were more worried that a trained police officer, retired, might in the heat of a exchange or heat of a violent act might accidentally harm their child than the fact that somebody in the school might be intentionally harming their child. It's irrational. It's illogical. But yet more and more today, it seems to win the day in the court of public opinion. Have we come so divorced from reality that we don't recognize something so foolish and ridiculous as disarming police? Now, are there police officers who abuse their powers? Absolutely. They're human. It's going to happen. But to paint the entire police force as incapable of defending your sons and daughters because of it, that you'd be happier if they were killed by a terrorist or an estranged student or somebody with a mental problem running amok or somebody in a drug-induced haze. You'd be happier if they were killed by them than allowing the law enforcement to be armed to protect them. Society is broken. And then this one, I'm going to get into a group about critical race theory. Now, I want to make a point. It's become quite evident that the term critical race theory is not being taught in most schools. The actual term is not used. What they're using is the tenets of critical theory, including critical race theory. It's like saying, you know, sure, we have trees with lights and decorations. We've got lights hanging everywhere and, you know, signs like Noel and Santa Claus and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but it's not Christmas because you never actually use the word Christmas. It's kind of the same thing. So we end up with this Kansas math teacher who resigned because of the district's requirement that they train based on many of the tenets of critical race theory and their renewed mask mandates. As she told at the school board meeting, that was a final straw. She could no longer work as a teacher in this school district because they required her to not only wear a mask, but to teach her students to be racists. Yes, the basis of all the basis behind critical race theory is that race is the critical factor. Your race is critical to who you are. You define everything based on race. It's racist. Now, I know I'm going to be called a racist for even saying that, but that just kind of proves my point. When you judge everything by race, you are by definition a racist. And to the racist, everything becomes defined by race. So you end up with Black Lives Matter saying that the U.S. flag is racist. Now, okay, I see red and I see white and I see blue, but you know what I don't see? I don't see racism. Now, there was a time in this country when we had legal slavery, absolutely. There was a time when parts of this country had legal racist laws where you were not allowed to vote if you were a certain race. You had to meet different standards. You had to eat in different locations. You had to sit in different parts of the bus. That time did exist. Is that what the U.S. flag stands for? No. It's why people like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said America has to live up to its promise that all men are created equal. We made that promise in 1776. America is expected to live up to it. The fact that we haven't always doesn't mean that the goals of that flag are racist. But if you're a racist, everything becomes about race. I remember as a young man, I was working the night shift at a truck stop. I was a cashier, and I had a gentleman out back, Jesse, very nice man. You have to understand, I was born in Lower Manhattan. I spent the first 11 years of my life living in a neighborhood that was 49% Black, 49% Puerto Rican, 2% everything else. I was the minority, and I didn't care. I had my best friend was a Black girl. My neighbors that I played with all the time were Hispanic. We didn't care. We were kids. Didn't matter. I was as close to colorblind as I think you could find in the country at the time. Now, I'm not pumping myself up. That was just, you know, I wasn't alone, but I didn't care what race you were, what color you were. All I cared about were you a decent person? I had no problem working with Jesse. Jesse was a great guy. We used to spend some time together occasionally. And he owned a shop and used to sell stuff to truck drivers out of the trunk of his car. It's got to be talked about on the radio, CB radio at the time. So we were working one night. We were kind of busy. I knew every driver that was out back. So when a gentleman walked in and said, hey, I'm looking for Jesse. I said, he's out back. He said, I've never met him. What does he look like? The easiest way to describe him was he's Black. He's the only Black man out there. You can't miss him. And Jesse was offended. He got all up in my face about it. And I said, Jesse, you are Black. It wasn't an accurate description. It wasn't given derogatorily. In fact, if you weighed 400 pounds, I'd have described you as the fat man out back. But we've become so hypersensitive to these concepts that everything must be racist, that we see racism, we're just plain doesn't exist. So when BLM members or say that the flag is racist, to me it tells me much more about them than it does about the flag or any other American. Or what about the NAACP official who not only attacked parents who are against teaching racism in schools? I'm not talking about teaching about the racism of the past. I'm talking about teaching young children to be racist, to judge everybody based on their race or their sexuality. Everybody gets judged and everybody gets ranked based on their race or their membership of some frequently artificially created class. And according to a Fairfax County NAACP official, well, those parents, well, just let them die. Let them die. Now, that's the vice president of communications for the Fairfax County PTA, who also is vice president, first vice president of the Fairfax County NAACP. So that's what happens when we become obsessed by these petty differences that for most of us mean absolutely nothing. We let people become obsessed with them and becomes a cancer. When black people can't live with white people, when we have segregated, we are returning to segregation, when we're having segregated dorms, segregated graduations, we're having, what's next? Segregated sporting events. Are we going to have whites sit in the back of the bus now? You can't cure racism with racism. That merely perpetuates racism. Were some truly awful things done because of racism? Absolutely. In the 60s, as a small child, I thankfully was shielded from most of the worst of it. As an older child in the 70s, though, I began seeing it, and it bothered me. But I refused to participate in it. I refused to judge anybody by the color of their skin, by their nationality, by what language they spoke, by where they went to church. I don't. But society has lost that. That's become broken. More and more we're being driven to judge people by the color of their skin, by their country, of their family's origin, by some arbitrary group they identify with, to the point where the hatred allows some to claim those who disagree with them, we should let them die. Does that sound healthy? It doesn't sound healthy to me. Or how about a group of progressives in Oregon that are lowering the academic expectations for minority students in the name of equity? Now, granted, this was something signed by Kate Brown, the governor of Oregon. She signed a bill that suspended proficiency requirements in reading, writing, and math for high school students on track to graduate for at least 5 years. According to a spokesman, she did this so that schools could develop new criteria that will benefit Oregon's Black, Latino, Latina, Latinx, Indigenous, Asian, Pacific Islanders, tribal, and other students of colors. If you're telling me that you believe that someone who is Black or Latino, I'm sorry, Latina and Latina makes sense, but Latinx doesn't. But if you're telling me that students of color aren't capable of meeting the same standards as whites? Who's the racist? Who's the one that looks at a student and says, "Oh, I'm sorry, you're black. We didn't realize that, so now we're going to make it easier for you." And then hamper that student for the rest of their life. They will spend the rest of their life behind the curve because groups pressured the governor and the legislature of Oregon to create lower standards for students of color. Now, if students of color in Oregon are not performing as well as students in white students or Asian students, since they're often left out, the question should be why. See, according to this legislation, the only thing that matters is there's a different outcome, not why there's a different outcome. Now, I hate to tell Governor Brown, but I've worked with many very intelligent, very proficient, and in many cases, very successful black men and women. And every time I saw them, I saw a program that tried to give them a pass because of their color, it seemed to grate it on them. You don't help students by making it easier for them to pass because of the color of their skin. You find out why they're not doing as well and you fix the problem. You don't fix the outcome, you fix the problem. If a student can't do basic math, if they can't balance a checkbook, if they can't figure out an ATM card, if they can't fill out a job, an employment application, if they can't pass the school grades that enables them to do that, the answer isn't you make it easier for them to pass. You fix the problem with why they're not learning. Now, I don't know why they're not learning in Oregon. Based on my own experience and my own research, I may have some ideas, but this is not the problem. The problem is people with great intentions and lousy execution and a society that allows it to continue. Now, thankfully, not all society is simply falling down and begging that the insane run the asylum. Over the last few months, we have seen parents that have come out and stood up and demand accountability for those who are politicizing education. Whether it be a transgender agenda, whether it be a racism agenda, the one silver lining to COVID is that parents have finally seen what their children are being taught, and many of them ain't happy. Now, there are, Loudoun, Virginia has been the hotbed for this, and there has been plenty of pushback by the establishment. But many of these parents are right. It's their children. The school boards are there to work for them, to educate their children, not to indoctrinate them with racism and gender theory and politically motivated control mechanisms. And it's time that parents around the country start doing the same thing about all manner of ills. But since society has become so weak, so broken, this is being allowed to not only happen, but to metastasize and to grow. And then people wonder where this all came from. This came from probably 2 to 3 decades of telling of everything from, little Johnny everybody has to win. Everybody gets a medal. Let's stop using red pen because it scares children. Of this coddling and protecting and don't, we don't want to give them bad grades because it'll make them feel bad. No, you want them to feel bad. You want them to work for better grades. You want them to learn how to overcome difficulties. No, we can't have that. The natural outcome is, well, if I can't be wrong, if I can't lose, if I can't get a failing grade, well, then society must adjust to accommodate whatever reasons I think I have for not doing well. And we get companies like American Express. Now, again, I'm old enough to remember when I got an American Express card when I was in my 20s. I thought I had made it. Here I am, you know, big tycoon businessman. I have an American Express card. It used to mean something. It was a tool to be used to further your education, to further your business roles. But now that same American Express company is training their employees at the very capitalism that American Express thrives on is racist. Now, I don't know about you, but I've yet to see a dollar bill refuse to change hands because the race of the people involved. The only time I've seen that happen are when racists try to interfere with the process of capitalism. Capitalism doesn't care what race you are. Capitalism says, if you can produce a good or service better or cheaper than your competitor, you can offer it to people, and if they value it, they'll buy it. You can trade your goods and your services for something that we refer to as money, something of value that we refer to as money. That's all capitalism is. But we have this stalwart of a capitalist system, the idea of a financial juggernaut known all over the world. And now it's teaching its employees that its very existence is racist. What are we to do? Well, the answer is we have to stop being afraid of being called names. Understand, name calling is the last resort of the person without an argument. I saw this story. It made me feel good. A story was an interview was done with a person who transitioned into a female as an adult, lived that way for 8 years, realized it wasn't working, got counseling, had some emotional healing. It dealt with their feelings of gender dysphoria. They realized that the hormones and the surgeries were unnecessary. They actually harmed this person. And they were willing to talk to others and to mentor others who wanted to reclaim the stability, to reclaim the reality of their biology. And a mother saw this panel discussion and wrote to him and said, "It gave me courage." Because she was watching her 10-year-old daughter being brainwashed into becoming transgender. Now, there was a lot of conversations, and this person went into the techniques used to do this. But the point I wanted to make here is this woman stood up and this mother stood up to defend her daughter. See, before we go looking out at the world finding who we can blame out there, we need to look in the mirror and see who we are going to blame right there between your own eyes. To recognize that, yes, governments are a mess, but in many ways they've gotten this bad because society has become a mess. It's become it's almost a feedback loop, right? The government induces the society consumes and encourages the government to induce more. And it becomes this positive feedback loop that just continues to grow. It's a runaway reaction. Well, you can't change society all on your own. What you can do is you can change what's between your ears. You can influence how your children think. Help them to recognize when they're being indoctrinated or brainwashed or just influenced to ignore truth or reality in favor of some social or political agenda. I'm not saying we don't still deal with the problems in government, but we must also recognize the problems in our society, and we must start by dealing with them in our own hearts. I can't change your heart, but maybe I can encourage you to change your own heart. And if I change my heart, and if you change your heart, and your neighbors and our neighbors and our families do the same, then maybe we can start bringing some sanity back to American society. Because if we want a future of freedom and liberty and rights that are protected, not just by our governments, but by our neighbors and our friends and our families, then we must start with our own hearts, by recognizing the rights of others, by coming to their defense, by willing to stand the slings and arrows of society, because it's right and it's just. Recognizing that if we don't stand for them when they're under attack, there'll be nobody left to stand for us when we are under attack. I know this is not an exciting message. It's not a rah-rah message. But it's that foundational concepts that America was built on. I think it was John Adams that said, "This form of government is designed for a moral people and is wholly unsuited for any other kind." We must return to being a moral people. Now, all of my shows go to podcast, typically a day or two after the broadcast. You can hear them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcasts, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. Do me a favor, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe and rate the show. It helps other people find me and find this message. And join us here next time at the Constitution Study.
Maybe you'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.